We are so incredibly excited that you guys are here with us for our second part of this series that we are calling Stay Positive. And I don't know about your life, but as I look at my own life and my own circumstances and the world in which I live, what I can say beyond a shadow of a doubt is this. Could this series come at any more of a fitting time? That as we look at our lives and especially at the world around us, doesn't it seem that as we look out, all it looks like is a sea of negativity? There are so many things in the events of the world and the circumstances of our lives that are so easy for us to focus our attention on, for us to constantly look at. And it doesn't take long for us to notice the rest of the world doing the same. That if we simply hop on social media or we have a conversation around the water cooler in the break room of our offices or even have a conversation with the stranger in the checkout line of the grocery store, what we'll quickly find is this, is that everybody else is feeling the negativity of the world around us and everybody else seems to be talking about it and seems to be focusing on it. And when it feels like the rest of the world is doing something, it becomes ridiculously easy for you and I to have this thought process pass through our minds. What's the big deal in me joining in? What's the big deal in me doing what everybody else is doing and posting about, talking about, thinking about all of the negativity that is happening in the world around me, all of the negativity that is bombarding me in my own circumstances? And oftentimes what we miss when it comes to this particular topic is that when it comes to our lives and our futures, a negative outlook never leads to a positive life. You see, that's the truth that we have to hang on to and the truth that we keep coming back to time and time again throughout this series. It's the central theme that for our lives and our futures and the sake of better moving forward, we have to recognize that a negative outlook never leads to a positive life. If you simply want a negative life like everybody else has, then keep focusing on negative things like everybody else does. But if you want something better, if you want to be better, live better, set a better example for your kids, experience better from this day forward, have the world look at you and say, there's something different about him or about her, and this time in a good way, there's something different about them, then we have to make some changes to the way in which we think, the things in which we look at, and even the ways in which we talk and the things that we post when it comes to the negativity in our world and in our lives. You see, it requires us to respond differently because even though negativity is all around us, we have a choice. What did I say last week? That pessimism and optimism are not a part of our natural character. They're a choice that we get to make every single morning when we slide out of bed, put our clothes on, and head off to the workplace. But I get it. Because what y'all may not know is that before I walk up on this stage, while I'm on this stage, when I walk down off of this stage, I'm a man. And I struggle with the exact same things that every single one of you do. And I feel the negativity in the world in which we live. I struggle with the negative circumstances of my life, and changing my outlook and changing the way I talk and changing the way I think can be ridiculously difficult. It is this cancer that is spread to every single one of us in this world. So much so that over the course of the last 2 years, there is this meme that has rose to popularity. Gen Z has labeled those of us who find the things we're walking through easy to complain about, they have labeled this particular person that is a constant complainer with this one word, Karen. Y'all heard that? And I just gotta say, I am so sorry if your actual name is Karen through all of this. And there's lots of different ways that people use this word or what they think it means, but really at the heart of it, at the base layer, this entire meme, this entire caption comes back to describing a complainer. And you know who I'm talking about. It's the lady who walks into your restaurant, and every single time she comes in, she's always got something to complain about. You brought me 3 lemons instead of 4, and she's the one always asking for the manager to come to her table to fix what's been broken or to give her a discount on her food. It's the people that you encounter in your everyday life, and they're always skeptical about everybody else. They see the negative, and they call that out, or do they keep their distance from everybody because they're skeptical about them? A few years ago, we had a student of ours that worked the drive-thru at McDonald's, and he told us this story, I'll never forget it, of this lady that came through the drive-thru, And she said, I would like to order a double cheeseburger, but could you make that with one patty, please? He's like, would you like me to put on the order just a cheeseburger? No, I said I want a double cheeseburger with just one patty. And he's like, okay, come on to the drive-thru window. We'll have it ready for you. And she drives up to the drive-thru window, and he's like, $2.49. And inside, he's like, I could have charged you $1.29 for a cheeseburger with one patty, but you insisted on wanting the double cheeseburger with one patty left off. And she took her bag from him, and she said, next time I order, get my order right. It's not that difficult. That, y'all, is a Karen, right? And you see, while we love deep down inside of us to degrade and to look at with disdain people who are labeled as complainers, what we hate to admit is this, is that deep down in every single one of us, there lies just a little bit of Karen. Because when we look at our lives and the circumstances of our lives, doesn't it feel like there's so many things to complain about? Our work, our bosses, our finances, our marriages, our crazy kids, the cold weather, and just give it a few months, we'll be complaining about how hot it is. You see, deep down inside of every single one of us, there lies this pull for us to complain about the negative circumstances of our lives and the negative events of this world. And yet, the good news is this. There is a cure for that pull inside of every single one of us. A cure for the complaining that we so often want to give into, that we so often want to join in with the crowd and the world around us. There is a cure that can move us away from that. And that cure lies in one place and in one place only. You see, the cure for your complaining and my complaining that is so easy to get sucked into lies in gratitude. That engaging in gratefulness every single day of our lives, as simple, as tangible, as practical as that, begins to move us away from solely thinking about the negative circumstances, negative events of our life and our world, and how easy it would be to complain about all of those things, and begins to change the way we think, change the way we talk, and change the things that we post. And several thousand years ago, a guy by the name of King Solomon, one of the wisest dudes to ever walk on this earth, wrote this incredible passage about the power of being thankful for the things that we have in our lives, about approaching every day with a thankful heart and what it can do in our lives, or the inverse effect of that if we choose to do the opposite. We find it in the book of Proverbs, chapter 15, verse 13. If you haven't done so already, it's a perfect time for you to crack open your weekly and pull out the notes page, or everything will come up on the screen for you as well. But here is what King Solomon writes. For a glad heart, or some translations say a thankful heart, makes a happy face. But a broken heart crushes the spirit. A thankful heart makes a happy face. It changes your life, your outlook in the present and in the future for the better. But a negative heart crushes your spirit. And what I love about this passage is it's like King Solomon is giving us beauty advice in this passage as well. He's saying that if you want to give your face a little bit more curb appeal, you don't need Botox, you don't need anti-aging cream. What you need is just simply to put a smile on your face. That is the way to add curb appeal to our faces and our lives and what we walk through every single day. But here's the problem. It's hard to smile, isn't it, when all we see is the negative? It's hard to smile and to have a positive outlook when all we look at are the bad things that happen to us every single day in our lives and in this world. And what we miss is that a great attitude always stems from gratitude. It stems from a choice to consistently look in the things in your life that you have or that you have been given that you frankly don't deserve. That being able to come back to that every single day changes our attitude, changes our outlook about that day and what we walk through every single day. And gratitude is a powerful tool that equips us to combat the struggles we face every single day, physically, mentally, emotionally, and if you're a Christ follower, even spiritually. And don't just take my word for it. You want a source that's outside of this? and the power in our lives and in our bodies when it comes to gratitude. A few years ago, there was a published report of a psychological study on the power of gratitude in our lives. And what you're going to see through this study is that the power of gratitude isn't just something that affects us mentally or emotionally. It also has physical effects in our lives and in our bodies. You see, throughout this psychological study, what they found was this, that the power of gratitude has the power to do these five things for us and the struggles we walk through. The first was this, is that if we engage in gratitude every single day of our lives, gratitude eliminates toxic emotions. You ever felt those before? As we walk through difficult relationships, difficult circumstances, we feel toxic emotions like anger and bitterness and rage, anxiousness, depression, anxiety, that we experience those things in our lives, and returning back to a state of gratitude every single day begins to eliminate, to push out those toxic emotions in our lives. Secondly, gratitude has the power to reduce pain. This is the physical element. That somehow, some way, when we engage mentally from a place of gratefulness, that it actually begins to reduce the physical pain we feel in our bodies from the things we walk through every single day. Third, gratitude, I need a little bit of this, y'all, improves sleep quality. Whether you have 4 and 5 year olds or you have newborns or you just have a boatload of stress, what so many of us are encountering is this: I would love to just get one really good night's sleep. How much better would that make me feel? And ending our day or approaching every single day with practices in place that allow us to be grateful for the things we walk through that day, the things we have, the things we've been given that we don't deserve, actually improves the sleep quality we have every single night of our lives. Fourth, they found that gratitude aids in stress regulation, hand in hand with the one before it, right? That as all of us encounter stressful circumstances in our lives, the best aid to those, to dissipate those in our lives, is for us to be thankful. It's for us to have gratitude. And then last is that gratitude actually has the power to reduce things like anxiety and depression in our lives. Is that as these things grow in our lives, our families, our world, more and more of us feel like we're battling anxiety and depression, real things. That having a heart of gratitude and finding things to be grateful for actually reduce things like anxiety and depression in our lives, in our minds, mentally and emotionally from this day forward. See, every single one of us have experienced at least one of these things on this list. And what you know to be true and what I know to be true is this. Is that as we walk through life and we encounter negative circumstances, those things pile on top of us and make our lives difficult. They want us to constantly focus on those negative events or those negative circumstances. But what we also know is this, is that when we encounter any of those five things or all of those five things on that list, doesn't it just pile on to the negativity in our life? Like, yeah, the negative circumstances were bad, but now I'm dealing with anxiety, and that's even more to complain about and more to be anxious about and depressed about and upset about. Yeah, the negative events were bad, but now I'm not getting any sleep, and now that's more for me to complain about and be negative about. Yeah, the negative events were bad, but I have all of these toxic emotions that are running through me and affecting my relationships, and all that stuff was bad, but now I've got even more to complain about in my life. You see, they only contribute to the things we have to complain about. And yet, approaching daily life from a place of gratitude begins to actually remove those triggers from our lives. They remove those triggers from our futures. And you see, when you begin to remove all of those things from your life, you get something incredible. It's this thing called peace. That we begin to encounter peace in our lives when we eradicate all of those other things, that list and our constant attention even to the negative events and negative circumstances of our lives, we begin to experience peace. And what I like to say is this, is that gratitude is the gateway to peace. Gratitude is the path that we must travel in order for us to experience peace in our lives, peace in our marriages, peace in our finances. And what I believe with all of my heart is that not only do I want that for your life and for your future, but we have a God who desperately wants you to experience peace in your life from this day forward. And he gives us the cue that in order for us to experience that, you have to make a choice to approach every single day and look at every single day from a place of gratitude, to see the things that you have been given that you don't deserve. But doing so requires us to change what we do every single day. It requires us to make a choice to do some simple, tangible things that bring gratitude back into our life and back into our daily practices. My wife and her best friend have this habit that almost every single day at the end of their conversations, at the end of their text, you'll see one of them message the other one something that goes something like this. What happened today that you were thankful for? Or what were three things that happened today that were great, that you really enjoyed? And as they've walked through this process and every single day they've challenged each other to this, what it has done is at the end of every single day, it has reframed their thoughts, reframed the way they look at the past day. That instead of focusing solely on the stresses and the chaos and the constant carpooling, the things of work that didn't go the way they should have, in my wife's case, the 27 screaming second graders that didn't act like they should have because we're getting too close to spring break, or whatever it may be, that it returns them back to a place of think about the things that happened today that you were grateful for, the things that were good about today. And you see, that one simple step begins to reframe everything in the way they look at every single day. And did I tell you before? Taking steps in the right directions don't have to be complicated. Isn't that ridiculously simple and ridiculously practical for us to do that in our own lives and the way in which we look back at every single day, every week, every month, every year of our lives? And frankly, you don't need another person to even challenge you to do that. It can be as simple as this. Go to Drug Mart and get a 79-cent notebook off the shelf and put it into your nightstand beside your bed. Or if you don't have a nightstand, slide it underneath your bed where you can grab it every night before you put your head on the pillow. And make it a habit. Write something down that you were thankful for that day. Write something good down. Write three things, five things. I don't know, however ambitious you want to get. However hard you're struggling against some of these things on that list. To introduce a little bit more gratitude into your life and to begin to practice that. And can I just say this? Because I know this from my own heart. All y'all are much better than this, but I just am going to say it. You are not too tough and too masculine to say things that you are grateful for. If you want a better life, we have to make difficult choices to do what nobody else is doing. And whether you're a man or you're a woman, this is a step for us to begin moving in the right direction, for us to push out the things that the rest of the world is experiencing that we don't want to experience. And so we choose to do something different and to put tangible practices in place to remind us of the things we have to be grateful for so that we don't have to deal with toxic emotions and pain and reduced sleep quality and stress and anxiety and depression that grow and grow and grow and ultimately become this insurmountable pile of things to complain about. And you see, this morning, if you walked in here and you find yourself in a pit of despair, struggling with anxiety, struggling with things like depression, what I believe with all of my heart is that gratitude is one of the best ways out of the pit of despair. A couple thousand years ago, a guy by the name of Paul writes this letter to his friends. And as Paul writes this letter to his friends, what we know about this time in Paul's life is that Paul is writing this letter to his friends, the church of Philippi, at a time when he is imprisoned. He has been thrown in jail for talking about this guy named Jesus. And we don't know if on this particular occurrence or not, if he's chained to like a Roman, stinky, big Roman prison guard 24/7 or not. But what we do know is that Paul is behind bars. He is confined. And because Paul is imprisoned at this point in his life as he writes this letter, we know three things for certain about what Paul is walking through in this moment when he is penning this letter. Number one, because Paul is imprisoned, he's trapped. He's incapable of going anywhere. He's stuck exactly where he is, right? Common sense to being jailed. Secondly, what we know about Paul is that in this moment, because he is in jail, he is facing an uncertain future. He doesn't know what his future looks like. He doesn't know what the future of the world looks like. Frankly, at this moment in time, Paul doesn't even really know what the future of Christianity, this faith that he's giving up his life and his freedom for, will look like. And third, Paul has no idea what tomorrow will bring. Paul has no idea if he will be sent to the cross to be crucified like this guy named Jesus, who he was thrown in jail because he was talking about him. He doesn't know if he'll be dragged back out into the street and beat with a wooden rod. He has no idea what tomorrow will look like. And y'all, I don't know if you've connected the dots or not, but this place in which Paul is writing from, does that sound familiar from where you and I have been at any point over the course of the last 2 years? Trapped, can't go where we want to go, stuck in the same place. Uncertain about our future, no idea what tomorrow will bring. I don't know about you. That might describe more than just the last 2 years of my life and my story. And yet Paul, as he sees all of these things that he could be negative about when it comes to the circumstances of his life, he begins to lay down this gauntlet to begin to change how we, you and I, think about our lives and the difficult circumstances we walk through and how we reframe our thoughts to begin looking at something different, to experience something different. We find this again in the book of Philippians, chapter 4, starting in verse 4. Here is what Paul writes. Always be full of joy in the Lord. I say it again, rejoice. Let everyone see that you are considerate in all you do. Remember, the Lord is coming soon. You see, right off the bat, Paul pulls out the ultimate dad card. And here's what I mean, right? Paul makes this decision. I've given you this instruction to be grateful. I want you to rejoice. And then he does this. I say it again, rejoice. Come on, parents, you've all been there before, right? You say something the first time, and you're like standing out in the rain, and your kids are getting out of their booster seats, and there's always one in every family, right, that's like the human rain delay, and like every time you're getting out of the car, it takes them like 77 minutes to get themselves out. They're going back for toys, and they can't get their seatbelt unbuckled, and there you are standing in the rain trying to get them out, and you're like, come on, guys, come on. And then the second time you go back to say it and you raise your voice a little bit, right? Everybody's head snaps around, and then we get the train moving, right? Everybody gets out of the car a little bit faster. And Paul is pulling that dad moment on you and I. He's saying, no, rejoice. Let me say it again. Rejoice. Find a way to be grateful in your life. And throughout this passage, man, I love days like today because this is where I get to geek out and we're going to go back and do some history stuff with our time remaining, and it's so ridiculously good, things that are missed at face value. But Paul, as he writes this same word twice, rejoice in this passage, he says it once, then he repeats it. He uses the exact same Greek word twice. Greek is the original language that Paul would have written this letter in when he wrote it to the church in Philippi. And the word that Paul chooses in this word rejoice is the Greek word kario. And this Greek word kario is literally defined as to rejoice. And you're like, Ben, that's not that earth-shattering. What we find is that this word kario is actually derived from the Greek root word charis. And this Greek word charis is literally defined as unmerited grace. Y'all connecting the dots yet? You know what Paul's doing here? He's saying in your life and in your circumstances that you will walk through in this life, it is impossible for you to find the correct amount of gratitude simply looking at your circumstances and the events of this world. The way in which you find true rejoicing is by keeping your eyes focused in this one place on the unmerited grace that you have been given through your heavenly Father. This grace that you did not deserve, that was extended to you, that when you keep your eyes firmly planted on that, there is this seed of gratitude that begins to grow in you, and it begins to expand, and it begins to take over your heart and your mind and your life. And then Paul finishes that passage with this. He says, oh yeah, and one more thing. If you're having trouble finding things to be grateful for, remember the Lord is coming again. You know what Paul's doing? He's saying, don't forget to have an eternal perspective. That all of the present circumstances on this earth that you are walking through will one day pale in comparison to the glory you will get to experience spending eternity with your Savior in heaven. If you need something to find gratitude for, then look there. Look at this unmerited grace and this time that you will get to spend in eternity with heaven with Jesus. Rejoice in that. And then he continues in verse 6. Don't worry about anything. Instead, pray about everything. Tell God what you need and thank him for all he has done. Don't worry. Now here, the Greek word for worry is actually defined as to be anxious. But there's a second definition that's tied to this Greek word as well. And some of y'all, this is going to click for you when you hear this second definition of worry. The second definition in the Greek of this word is to be pulled apart. Any of y'all in the stresses of your life and the stresses of this world feel like in those moments that you are being pulled apart? That all the responsibilities you have, all the things that aren't going as planned, all the days where you feel like you just can't get ahead, and you are a constant chauffeur to your kids, that you are being pulled in a million different directions by marriage and parenting and finances and work and the stresses of the weather and the pandemic and everything else that this world and this life throws at you. And Paul says, don't be pulled apart by all of that. Instead, choose, what does he say? To thank God. Here we go again. That word thank that Paul uses in there is the Greek word eucharistia. Did you hear it? Right smack dab in the middle of that Greek word is the word charis again. Eucharistia. Be thankful for the unmerited grace once again that you have received. You should walk through life with an attitude of constantly remembering what you have been saved from. And that sets the table for you to be able to walk forward much healthier than you were walking before. And then he continues in verse 7. Then you will experience. He says, if you're willing to take these steps and remember the unmerited grace, remember the eternal perspective, remember what you have to be thankful and grateful for, then you will experience this. It's what we talked about earlier. You will experience God's peace, which exceeds anything we can understand. His peace will guard your hearts and minds as you live in Christ Jesus. You will experience a peace that exceeds what makes sense in light of your circumstances. And y'all, I don't know if you guys are like me, but when I hear something like that, my first response is, sign me up. Am I right? Because y'all, we've walked through some crappy circumstances in our life. We've walked through some crappy circumstances in our world. And what we know, we've lived on this earth for long enough, is that they ain't done. We're going to experience them again in our future. And yet, you're telling me that I can experience peace in light of whatever this world may throw at me? That exceeds all understanding, that doesn't make sense to the rest of the world, and yet I still have it. Sign me up for just a little bit of that. This word peace in the Greek was defined, and this stands in contrast to the word worry. What did I say worry was? Worry was defined as to be pulled apart. This word peace was literally defined as to be made whole. That this was God's desire for your life and for my life. For us to experience something in which we feel as if we have been made whole. See, this was God's design. God's design was for us to live our lives like this. To be whole. And whole in all lives looks like this. That I know who I am. That I know why I was created. That I know who my Savior is, that I know where my identity lies, that ultimately I know where my victory is won. And because of those things that I have in line, I am made whole. No matter what this world throws at me, I have all of those things at the forefront of my mind. And I am one. And I'm able to walk forward confidently and securely because I have been made one. And yet, while this was God's design for all lives, for us to experience this peace that guards our heart and guards our life and makes us feel whole, ultimately, for many of us, what we experience is a whole lot more like this. It's like, God, yeah, I know you created me to be whole, to be one, but we begin to become pulled apart. And it's like, right now my job is stressful, and right now my finances are not secure, and we're battling back from credit card debt, and my kids aren't making wise choices. And I don't have little kids anymore. They're grown kids, but they're still not making wise choices, and I'm not very proud of them. And I have marital problems. My spouse wasn't living by the book, and they were going behind my back and doing things that were unfaithful in my marriage. And all I am is the constant chauffeur, and I don't know what my purpose is. And will gas prices ever go down? And will we ever get out of this pandemic? And will we ever get out of the wars and the hate that happens in our world? And all of a sudden, we become pulled apart into all of these different pieces. And this is our life, this tray. And it's like we're in this constant balancing act. And when we've been pulled apart into all of these different pieces, we tend to do one of two things. Number one, I have so many balls on my plate, and I don't want to drop them. I don't want to mess up. And so the only logical choice is for me to become paralyzed. I think I can keep them all steady if I just don't move. If I just don't live out my purpose. If I just don't try to do anything different or better with my life, my marriage, my parenting. And we just try to keep all these balls afloat. Or we think, man, I'm going to get ambitious, and I don't have to fear, and so I'm going to move forward, and we begin to walk, and then another circumstance in life comes, and we trip, and the pieces of our life go everywhere, and it's a mess, and we don't know how we're going to recover, and it leads us to believe, well, the next time when I'm pulled apart, then the only logical solution is just for me to stand still, just for me to operate out of complete fear. And God says, no, that's not your only choice. Your only choice was to experience a peace that exceeds all understanding, for you to be made whole, for you to know where your identity is in me. I'm a God who says you are my masterpiece, that you were created on purpose for a purpose, and that ultimately, no matter what this world can throw at you, you have security and identity in me. And ultimately, every victory of your life is won and lies in me and in me alone. This is what he wanted you and I to experience. Not that juggling act. But to do that, we have to take our eyes off of what everybody else seems to be looking at, all the things that only feel natural to complain about, and to relook at all the things we have that were unmerited that we can be thankful for. But Paul doesn't stop there. He finishes in this incredible way. He says, oh yeah, if you want to experience all that again in your life, this is what you must do. He finishes like this in verse 8. And now, dear brothers and sisters, one final thing. Fix your thoughts on what is true and honorable and right and pure and lovely and admirable. Think about things that are excellent and worthy of praise. You want to simplify that? You know what Paul is saying here? Consistently and constantly fix your thoughts not on the negative, but on the positive that you have in your life, that you have been given. You know what Paul is saying? Change what you think about. Because what Paul knew was this: where your mind goes, so goes your heart. You feel pulled apart. You feel anxious, depressed, fearful, worried, pulled in a million different directions. Change what you think about. And I get it, y'all. For some of us, man, we look back with fond thoughts to 2 years ago, right? It's like, I really feel like looking back, this was me. And things were clear. And I was positive. And things were all good. I was happy about my marriage. I was happy about my job. We were in a good place financially. It seemed like things couldn't go wrong. Everything was all good. But then 2 years ago, almost to the date, something happened. And it's like all of a sudden in my life and in my circumstances, there's a global pandemic introduced. And I'm not so sure about my health or the health of my family. Or maybe it's outside of the global pandemic. There was that diagnosis, that scare that you had in going to your doctor's office. And now there's been something introduced into your story, into your life that clouds it just a little bit. Or in the aftermath of that, I had this great job and we had great finances that we were happy with, but then that all got turned upside down. And I didn't know if I was going to keep my job, or my wife lost her job and now we're down to one income and I don't know how we're going to make it. And all of a sudden, here we go. And my kids seemed like they were doing good, but now they've gone 2 years and they haven't gotten the educational progress that we would have wanted them. And it feels like they're falling behind. And I don't know if they're ever going to catch up. And I don't know if things are ever going to go back to normal. Oh yeah, and then the murder hornets. And all of a sudden, what once was so clear and seemed like it was headed in the right direction, and our thoughts were where we wanted them to be, and there were things to be positive about, now all of a sudden we look at our life and all we see is this blue cloud of all the negative events and all the negative circumstances that we've walked through or that we're presently walking through. And onto the scene comes Paul. And he says, you want to get that clearness back again? There's a tangible step that you must take. Stop thinking about all the things that cause the cloudiness and start thinking about all of the things that you have been given, that you have. The unmerited grace that has been given to you. How does Paul define it? Set your mind on what is true and honorable and right and pure and lovely and admirable. Think about things that are excellent and worthy of praise. Paul says you got to get back to a place where you're willing to fill your mind with this, with the good stuff. And I know, y'all, there's going to be a time that comes where you're like, Ben, it's Wednesday and I tried for 3 days. And it's still blue. I guess it's not working. I guess it's worth giving up on. I guess there's just no hope for me. And Paul's like, whoa, 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 whoa. This is the thing you've got to persevere with. This is the thing you've got to continue to do. This is the thing where I get my own human nature right. Paul's the dude that says, every time I know what I want to do, I just can't seem to do it. And what I don't want to do, I just keep doing. Paul knows there's going to be days where you fall off the horse. He's like, no, 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 you got to get back up on. And you got to set your mind on what is positive. And there's going to be bad days where it's a struggle. But you got to have that notebook out. And you got to remind yourself. And you got to keep going. And you got to keep filling yourself up. And you got to keep filling your mind with what is true and what is right and what is noble and what is pure. And there comes a time where in the midst of all of that, when you fill yourself up, that things begin to go back to clear again. That you begin to change from the inside out and that your future becomes a whole lot less murky. Hang on, y'all. Not because the circumstances get better. I'm sorry if you came here wanting that message. That's not what Jesus ever gave. The change is the clear because you change what you look at. You change what you think about. You change what you focus on. You put steps into your life to say, I'm going to end every single day remembering the unmerited grace, the things I've been given that I don't deserve, what I have to be thankful for. And when that happens, we reap the benefits. Physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually. See, none of y'all want to be complainers. The reason I know that is because none of us like spending time with complainers, right? And if you don't want to be a complainer, you have a choice. You can change that. You can begin to head in a new direction, but changing that requires us to come back to this place of gratitude every single day. And if you need a starting point, Paul gives it. The starting point is the unmerited grace that has been extended to you and to I. This gift that has been given by our Savior, Jesus Christ, when he stepped onto the pages of history, that he extended this grace that you and I didn't deserve, could never earn, and yet he was willing to go to a brutal and bloody cross and sacrifice himself and endure separation from his heavenly Father so that you and I never would have to in our lives. That is what's been extended to you and I, and that is the starting place for getting us back to a point in which we no longer focus on what's negative that takes us down the path of experiencing everything negative that everybody else is experiencing, but we change what we think, we change what we look at, and ultimately it changes our life and it changes where we go. We don't have to be complainers anymore. We can. No matter what this world, no matter what our circumstances throw at us, stay positive. Would you pray with me? Father, this morning, God, we thank you for being a God who's extended this unmerited grace. A love that doesn't make sense. A love that we didn't earn. And yet you gave it to us freely. You paid the price so that we wouldn't have to. And yet, God, in light of that, in my own life, it is still so easy for me to focus on all the negative circumstances that happen on a daily basis, the negative events of this world, and to be consumed by that. And instead of being positive about how we can bring about positive change and stand in the gap for the sake of others and the hurting and the broken in our world, we just wallow in our own sorrow, in our own heartbreak, in our own negative circumstances. But God, I pray this morning for every single one of us that we make the conscious decision that we want to shift the things we think about, that we want to shift what we look at, that we don't want the negative things that everybody else has because they're looking in negative places, that we want something better. And so today, may we be willing to make better choices. Small, easy, tangible steps to just remember the things we have that we can be grateful for and to allow that to begin transformation work on us.